SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We welcome you to hour number three, our third and final live right here on this Wednesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We will continue your playoff previews here in this third and final hour. We'll get you set for tonight inside Madison Square Garden, game number one of the Eastern Conference Finals between two very, very familiar postseason foes. That would be the Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks. We'll talk some Major League Baseball on this Wednesday from the bright mind of Donnie Wrightside. And of course, we got to talk the NFL owner meetings here to start off this third and final hour. Yep. We'll also check in with Keith Stewart, who was live last week at the PGA Championship in Charlotte, to recap Scottie Scheffler's brilliance. Once again, what it means for Scottie, only 28 and already three major championships to his name, and a new week on the PGA Tour as well. DRS, plenty in store here in this third and final hour.
Yeah, it should be a good one here to close out the show here on a hump day Wednesday. Interesting news here. New guests, new characters showing up to the meetings here with the owners to try to sway public opinion. But I got to tell you right now, you know, we're going to get this vote probably quicker. You know, most people already have, or should I say most organizations know where they're going. I don't know if the opinions will be swayed that we'll get to in just a few moments. But I'm telling you right now, opening night, September the 4th, that Thursday, when the Eagles get that first drive. Heck, you know what they might do, Ben, on the opening drive of the game? Run three straight quarterback sneaks and get a first down on the ground that way, just to set the tone for the regular season.
All right, DRS, I appreciate your optimism and your Philadelphia Eagles, but let's talk about what we have just learned from those NFL owner meetings and the NFL insiders there in Minneapolis. The Detroit Lions, who were the ones to propose the change in playoff seeding, as we alluded to, still four divisional champions and three wild card teams, but when those seven playoff teams reach the postseason, they would be seeded not based on divisional titles and earning that home field advantage, but just one through seven based on regular season record. That proposal has been tabled. The Lions did not have the necessary support, so they withdrew it. Good. We give our round of applause to everybody in the National Football League. With that being the case, I think DRS and I are both pleased with that result. We are not changing the playoff format, and we really shouldn't ever.
You shouldn't. Like, there means, like, divisional rivalries mean something. Winning division means something. Your prize for winning division, you get a hat, you get a t-shirt, and you get a home playoff game. What is wrong with that? Nobody's ever complained about that ever. And also, for the Detroit Lions to have this proposal when they actually won the division and got the lowest seeded possible team and still got beat. I don't know what they were actually upset about, but you know, it's a bad proposal when you don't even let it go to a vote because how stupid it actually was. Thank you, NFL owners, for being like, let's not waste the paper to check something off on. This is the dumbest thing we've heard here. It means something to win divisions. Thank you, NFL, for standing up to common sense and saying, you know what? Let's just keep it the way it is. We all love football.
It's the tradition. It's the rivalry. It's the geographic ties between these divisions that when you incentivize it so much by weighting your regular season schedule, six divisional games, 17 in total, more than a third of your games against your divisional opponents, then there should be weight to winning that divisional crown. I am glad we have seen it there with that common sense approach. So then, of course, the big story of this Wednesday in Minneapolis becomes the tush push. We brought you the news earlier that with the Player Health and Safety Committee and that competition committee voting to ban the play, the Athletics' Diana Russini saying more than likely the tush push would be banned on this Wednesday. Not if Jason Kelce has anything to do with what Jason Kelce. This stunning development from NFL Network's Tom Pelissero. As NFL owners get set to debate and vote on banning the tush push, Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie just entered the room in Minneapolis with former center Jason Kelce. Like out of a comic book, the hero of the tush push resides now in the Twin Cities.
Probably was wearing a pair of flip flops, some skinny jeans out there, just looking in nice, tight and fit, and getting up. Here's what I want out of Jason Kelce, which I don't know if he's talking right now, but if he was, I wish I got wired in, because he shouldn't actually be up there talking about the safety of the play. And as he talked about, I was going to come back here, and you know, if I had to play 80 tush pushes a game, I would certainly do that. Go up there and rip everybody and say you can't stop it. That's why you're voting against it. Yeah. The Eagles won the world championship. They've won two now in 10 years. You can't let this mayhem get here, because they are starting to turn into America's team. That's why you're banning it. Just admit that and then walk off. He shouldn't have anything to say about the safety of it. Just rip the other owners for saying, you can't stop a play we designed. Now we're on top, and you can't take it right now and eyeball Jerry Jones and get out of there.
Yeah, it's one of the lamest things I've ever heard, to have a former center and an NFL media personality now to be in the room to try to sway opinion of how the owners are going to vote on this. Listen, I am pro tush push. I am against the ban of said play. That's incredibly lame behavior, DRS, from your Eagles and a former star. I'm sorry.
Here's what the Eagles should do. Right. Jeffrey Lewis should get up there and be like, I'm going to play quarterback and have the other old-ass owners line up, and they can tush-push them right out of the room and cross the goal line. That will be – and they vote, bang, yes, we keep the play. How about that?
No actual center. Kelce forms Saquon Barkley's role. He's pushing Jeffrey Lurie. Maybe Jerry Jones snaps it
Exactly.
See, now you do have to wonder, right? Does Kelce need security personnel? Is Big Dom there? He is always omnipresent when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles. All right, we'll see what happens with the actual vote when we get that vote at some point of this Wednesday, and our reactions to it more than likely on a Thursday. Would be great, especially for DRS, if we can avoid NBA playoff previews and we get the result of that vote here in this third and final hour. But let's hear from the people, DRS, about the Eastern Conference Finals. Game number one tonight in MSG, the Knicks and the Pacers. Not just who wins this first game, but better yet, who wins the series overall and advances to the NBA Finals. Some surprising votes, speaking of voting, in our Fade the Public poll. At Sports Grid on Twitter, which team will win the Eastern Conference Finals? The Knicks or the Pacers? Of course, New York, an ever so slight series outright favorite at minus 144. I think if you ask the public, does this go to seven games? Most would say yes. So we expect it to be close. Mm-hmm. But what I find surprising, DRS, is nearly 45 or 54% of the public, I should say, backing the series outright underdogs in the Indiana Pacers. I would have thought the New York Knicks momentum would have at least had the public back in the Knicks.
Yeah, I'm actually rooting for the Knicks to win this series just because I like the theater of Madison Square Garden and the excitement that it brings here at this point. But I did vote for the Pacers. I'm part of that 53.7% on the updated numbers. So I do think it's going to be a great series. I do think there's going to be an extended series going to six or seven games. But I just think the Pacers might be slightly deeper overall as a team here and just have a little bit more than the Knicks. Now, the Knicks are favored to win the series, and they should be. They have home court advantage. And I did pick the Knicks to win tonight because I feel like it's a must win. But that's sort of my feeling. Like, I have the Pacers winning the series because in no way, shape, or form should my feeling be like, well, if the Knicks lose game number one, I don't think they can win the series. Like, I actually feel that. Like, that's how important the game is tonight for the New York Knicks. Yeah. So I voted for the Pacers. It's close to 50-50, and we'll watch it play out.
Shout out to our guy, Todd, or Colin, who replied to the Fade the Public poll with a wild six-pick parlay, DRS, that needs the Pacers to win this series. He had the under of an alt total last night between the Pirates and the Reds. Mm-hmm. It stayed under. He had a two-pick same-game parlay for the Cardinals and the Tigers. Both hit. He needs the Pacers to win the East and the Oilers to win the Cup. More on the early line next. Yeah.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Wednesday morning on the Early Line on Sports Grid. All last week, Keith Stewart joins us live from Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte, North Carolina, the site of the 2025 PGA Championship. On this Wednesday, Keith is here once again to react to what we saw all week long in Charlotte in major championship victory number 3 in the very promising, still young career of Scottie Scheffler. Keith, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for being here on TEL.
Ben, Donnie, it's a pleasure. As it turns out, Scottie Scheffler, he has reasserted himself. I mean, he jumped in the DeLorean, took us right back to last year, and he just started winning everything. I'm afraid he could go on a run here.
Keith, anytime we are breaking down a PGA Tour event or a major championship that features Scottie Scheffler, we often look at the odds board and we ask a similar question. Because of how short the favorite price is on Scottie, where is the value elsewhere? But if you're betting Scottie Scheffler, you're happy with the results that you have seen. 15 wins now since March of 2022, including 2 major championships. His first, not at Augusta, on Sunday in Charlotte at the 2025 PGA Championship, hoisting that Wanamaker Trophy. A final score of 11 under par for the tournament. He was the favorite at a 4-1 price entering last week at Quail Hollow. He cashes that ticket. Keith, you were there in Charlotte. You saw the week that Scheffler had. What was the key to his victory, winning by 5 shots at the PGA Championship?
Well, you know what, Ben? It's interesting because everybody wants it to be Bryson. They want it to be Tiger all over again. They want Rory, but Scottie just kills you. But it's like death by 1,000 paper cuts. He just doesn't make mistakes. He made one mistake all week, and he blamed it on a mud ball when he made double bogey on round one on Thursday on the 16th hole. I mean, he could have won this thing by 7, essentially, if he makes par there. He just doesn't make this mistakes. As the golf course gets harder and harder over the weekend, the wind was blowing. I was out walking with those late groups, with Bryson, with Rahm, with Scottie, and he just doesn't hit bad shots. He never puts himself in a bad position. And over the course of 72 holes, and he says it himself, he goes, it takes 4 days to win these tournaments. And he's learned that from the likes of watching Jack over the years or watching Tiger. I mean, those guys, they just don't run out on a Thursday and really worry about anything. They position themselves, and then they let the leaderboard gravity take over on a Sunday afternoon.
And on Sunday afternoon, too, I just want to bring up this one topic with Scottie Scheffler. Didn't drive the ball all that well. And then we find out that a lot of these guys failed the driver test. The one thing they can explain to us, Keith, like, what was that test entailing? And also, why did so many people fail? And how do they accommodate that? Because I saw Scottie in one of his post-round interviews saying, you know, we have to figure out something that's going to work for everybody. What was the controversy and what happened?
Okay, so a top-line view on that, Donnie, is that every week equipment is tested, but they just select like maybe 25% of the field, and they select their equipment, and of course they're testing the driver. The driver faces are pushed to such a maximum as far as the spring-like effect, and of course these guys hit it in the same place every time. They weaken over time. Imagine you had kids and they had a trampoline, and they go out in the backyard, and they just jump up in the center over and over and over and over again. Well, it would stretch the center of the face. And these guys know, especially the ones that are over about 170 miles an hour ball speed, like a Scottie, like a Rory, like a Bryson, that after about 5-6 months of using it, it's just not going to pass anymore. It's just going to become too spring-like. And we don't kind of know exactly when that's going to happen. So the USGA tests these guys as a third party, as an objective institution. So the PGA of America doesn't test. The PGA Tour doesn't test. They do it for them. And then they determine, oh, this face is too hot. You have to replace this driver. What's interesting to me is that it was a big deal for Rory, and he missed a lot of fairways last week going to his next driver. When Scottie handled the conversation in his post-tournament interview, he just said, yes, mine failed. Yes, I had a new game already, and yes, I used it, right? It was like, it's like two totally different tales of how you could handle that whole conversation. Rory never talks to the media about it, you know, just lets it all permeate the building, and Scottie just answers the question directly. It's kind of like the way they play golf. I mean, Scottie just goes out, hey, Scottie, hit it right here. He does, make the putt, let's move on. We're going to play the next hole. It's a very interesting dynamic, but overall, this testing is going on all the time. The one thing they could improve, and I agree with Scottie, just test people once a month, all the time, and I think it would probably quiet some of the controversy.
Even with his backup driver in the bag, Scottie Scheffler wins his third career major championship by 5 shots. And Keith, there's been a lot of conversation, of course, this golf season already at our two majors about career legacy, about a career Grand Slam. Rory McIlroy completed that with his first green jacket back in April at Augusta. Scottie Scheffler now halfway there with a PGA championship and the Wanamaker Trophy. With the top back on, by the way, that was one of the other mistakes that Scottie Scheffler made in the trophy ceremony. The top of the Wanamaker sliding off, but outside of that, a pretty picture-perfect week for Scheffler. He has won a Masters, and he has won a PGA Championship. Two more major championships remaining this year, a United States Open coming up next month, and the Open Championship across the pond in Northern Ireland. Keith, is Scottie Scheffler going to add to that career Grand Slam this season?
I mean, he's definitely the favorite to do it, Ben. But I want to pump the brakes just for a second. When you start to talk about legacy, Scottie's now 29 years old, and he's getting a lot of comparisons to Tiger Woods. So, you know, I did the math. We went back to when Tiger was 29 years old. So Scottie at this point, right, he has 138 career starts. He's got those three majors. He's got two players. He's got 18 total wins overall, if you want to count the Hero Challenges and all of those, right? Tiger at 29. He had 173 career starts. He had 45 wins, 8 majors, and only 1 players. I'm sorry. But what Scottie needs to do to start to assert himself and to answer your question about these majors is that he's got to start making some runs. Tiger used to win 5-6 in a row at multiple times in his career. He used to own certain places. Well, we look at the next venue for Scottie. He's going to Colonial this week. He's got to win now, what, be 3 in a row. Then he goes to Muirfield Village. He won there last year. Then he goes to a U.S. Open. He hasn't won one of those, but it's going to be a difficult golf course. He'll truly be the favorite. Like, this is what he needs to do the week after the U.S. Open, the Travelers. He'll be the defending champion. If he rattles off a couple in a row here, then I think we really start to talk about him being, you know, a multiple major winner in the same calendar year.
And Scottie in action this week at the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial in his hometown of Dallas, Texas. We'll talk about it up next with Keith here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A new stop on the PGA Tour this week at Colonial. That's not a new stop. It's one of the storied venues for each and every PGA Tour season. It's the Charles Schwab Challenge here starting this week in Fort Worth, Texas. Scottie Scheffler, Keith, back home with a new major championship trophy. And we talked about it as soon as we welcomed you on. Anytime we are breaking down a PGA Tour event or a major championship that features Scheffler in the field, it's a ridiculously low number. Plus 240 is that number on Scottie Scheffler to win the Charles Schwab Challenge this week. And you see the next best price of Daniel Berger and Jordan Spieth, both at 22 to 1, nearly $20 behind the price of Scottie Scheffler. So, Keith, let's start there. What does Scheffler do for an encore after winning the PGA Championship last week in Charlotte?
Donnie, Ben, I actually think the number should be lower. The last time he was in Texas, he won by 8. And that golf course was easy for the field. I mean, people should have been closer to him. Then he went to Quail Hollow, which he's never played competitively in stroke play, and he won there by 5. I mean, he should almost be down like at even money. And it's, of course, it's unbettable. So there's other ways to get around that. FanDuel has it at plus 240 this morning. But, you know, if you just want to take him on Thursday, and let's say he goes out like he did at the CJ Cup and shoots 10 under, you'll get plus 1,200 for a first-round leader. Or take him out as a third-round leader. You'll get plus 300. At least it's a bigger number than the plus 240. I mean, Scottie's winning this week, and we probably should just talk about the without Scottie, you know, field and that outright line bet.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, too, because of how much a favorite he is, but also coming off such of the emotional, you know, aspect of winning the PGA Championship and then playing the very next week. But tell us a little bit about this golf course. You know, Quail Hollow, certainly with the end of the golf course, what, 16, 17, and 18, which was so tough to comprehend. Yeah. Colonial Golf Course, 7,200, 7,300 yards here. Weather conditions, what can we look forward to this weekend?
Well, Donnie, 2 years ago, the course went through an extensive renovation, and it's nearly 80 years that they've been coming here on the PGA Tour. You know, Hogan's Alley, all of that, right? So it has a ton of history there, but Gil Hanse and Jim Wagner came in 2 years ago, and they redid the entire golf course, tried to restore it back to some of its roots. So we had 1 year, Davis Riley last year. Yeah, I mean, he just boat raced Scotty Scheffler. I don't know if Scotty's any good, but he beat him by five. Davis Riley was 14 under par, though. Scotty at nine. He took him down on Sunday. And what we've learned is that when the guys redid the golf course, that you pretty much need the same principles involved. Number one is that about 50% of your approach shots are going to come from between 125 and 175 yards. Of course, that's probably Scotty's number one range, but I digress. You got to be good in that range. Number two is that I love concourses here. There's not always a very strong like history component or experience component for guys that have played here before, but guys that have played places like Valspar or they've played the Wyndham Championship golf courses, Bermuda grass rough, like those types of venues, very positional off the tee. I like those guys when it comes to, you know, filling out the betting card. And then the third thing I would say is that you got to be used to Bermuda grass. They're not overseeding this week. So you're not going to see all that plush green that you saw at Quail Hollow. You're going to see Bermuda grass rough all the way up to and around the greens. The greens are going to be firm and fast. You know, they've only redone them a year ago. When you do sod them like that, they're usually very, very hard, like what we saw last week at Quail Hollow. The ball's going to be bouncing. You're going to be able to chip and score from close range.
All right, Keith, you asked and we shall deliver some Keith Keys for the golf course and now the early leans on the early line. The outright odds, the winner without Scottie Scheffler, Daniel Berger, has the shortest price at 16-1. Spieth and Tommy Fleetwood, both 18-1, and Hideki Matsuyama, a 20-1 price. Those are the four golfers at 20-1 or better to win the Charles Schwab Challenge without Scottie Scheffler factoring in to this equation. So the early leans on the early lines, which golfers have a good week in Fort Worth, not named Scheffler?
One of them you've already mentioned a couple times, Daniel Berger. The guy is more than due. He won here back in 2020 when we came out of the COVID restart, and that field was totally stacked because guys hadn't played for months. He took them down, so I think that he's going to be very comfortable here. The ball striking has been absolutely impeccable for him since February. The putter, it usually takes like one round off per week, and as such, then he ends up in that top 20 zone. I think it's time that Berger needs to break through. He's going to get on these bent grass greens, a place where he's comfortable, a place where he has won, and he's got Ryder Cup aspirations, and he wants to complete that comeback. Why not Colonial? The second guy, JT Poston, he almost delivered at Quail Hollow, but guess what? At plus 3,300 in the without Scotty market, I think this is a guy, he definitely fits the golf course, great putter, and when he's hot, like back in 2022, he was second to the Travelers, the next week he wins the John Deere. He was great at Quail Hollow. You know what, guys, I'd keep an eye on him. He's rolling the rock really, really well. JT Postman, he's going to deliver.
Keith Stewart, we appreciate it. As always, thank you for being here on the Early Line. Some MLB previews on this Wednesday. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A full Wednesday around Major League Baseball to break down for you as we get ready for some plays from Donnie on the diamond. One game currently about to begin again. The Twins and the Guardians trying to finish out their game that was postponed and suspended in the fourth inning from Monday, with the Twins having a 2-1 lead, trying to build a new win streak after their 13-game win streak came to a close on Sunday in Milwaukee. I'm seeing live on FanDuel. That game is live and has resumed in the fourth. That seems like an early start, but we'll look at that in just a matter of moments. A ton of starts at 110, and why is FanDuel saying live? I'm not crazy. Look at it, though. No, but it's still saying
Wait, what? Okay. No, you can't be able to bet the game live if it's not playing live. What are we talking about now?
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we'll forget that. The Twins and the Guardians, by the way, playing a ton of baseball today. DRS, a ton of afternoon baseball as well on this Wednesday. But we go late night to Chavez Ravine between the Dodgers and the D-backs. Dustin May and Corbin Burns on the bump. A really good matchup for the rubber match in this three-game set between these divisional foes. The D-backs win game number one. The Dodgers snap their four-game slide, winning game number two in extras last night in a wild game, and are an ever-so-slight home money line favorite today, minus 138. Total stands at 9. Donnie, by Dodgers standards, a minus 138 home money line price is basically like an even money price on LA at home. Who wins this series? Who wins the rubber match?
Yeah, you take. I mean, the better pitcher, probably just name-wise, would be Corbin Burns, as we know. But Dustin May, you take a look at his last 30 days, Ben, 27 and two-thirds innings pitched, close to a 6.5 ERA, and also leaking some oil both lefty and righty side here. You take a look at his last 56 righties he's faced, a 265 ISO and a 434 weighted on base percentage. Now, granted, you get a nice mix of left-handed bats and right-handed bats in the lineup on a daily basis here for Arizona. You look at the first seven guys anticipated in the lineup today: Carroll, Marte, Gurriel, Naylor, Suarez, Smith, and Moreno. Everybody there has plus weighted on base numbers and low K percentages. So we're expecting a pretty good output here from the side for the Arizona Diamondbacks in 75 degree temperatures at night with a first pitcher with a slight wind blowing out to center field. The Dodgers also present themselves very well against right-handed pitching over the past month. How about only Tommy Edman at a 275 weighted on base percentage? Look at the rest of the lineup here. 500, 468, 322, 448, 394, 436, 467, and 468. Those are the weighted on base percentages of the Dodgers over the past month. And we're not even talking about, Ben, they only have 11 at-bats, 77 at-bats, 76, 74, 42, 73. You get the picture. But also, Corbin Burns, his last 30 days, Ben, 24 and a third innings pitched. How about a 0.74 ERA out here? And also, his weighted on base percentages against at 238. His ISO power numbers against, combining lefty and righty batters, in 071. I think the better lineup today, per se, is the Dodgers, but maybe Corbin Burns can slow that lineup down again, and they can get after Dustin May. Maybe a short dog price on Arizona does make some sense today. We'll see what those bats do for the Dodgers.
Again, four teams in the National League West above 500. That includes the D-backs, who are 26 and 23. The Dodgers, 30 and 19 atop this division. The other team is the Rockies. They are 8 and 40. Oh, boy, it is bad this year at Mile High. DRS, I'm not sure I would bet the Diamondbacks to win this division. The Dodgers are the hefty, hefty favorites and have a substantial lead. Four games in front of Arizona entering the rubber match, with both San Diego and San Francisco sandwiched in between. I'm not sure I'd bet the D-backs to win the NL pennant. Maybe a Diamondbacks price to reach the National League postseason, but it is rather jumbled. Arizona's updated win total, 87.5. I think this is a really good D-backs team. I would lean with the over. They're a difficult team to get out at the dish. I like this Arizona squad. A sweep at stake today in Fenway for the Boston Red Sox against the New York Mets. It has been the Sox in each of the first two, planking New York yesterday 2-0. After Walker Buehler was ejected, six total pitchers, including Buehler, only allowing four base knocks in total to the New York Mets, who came up with a goose egg last night in Boston. Tonight, Garrett Crochet on the bump for the Red Sox against Tyler McGill on the other side for the Amazons. Total is 8. Boston is favored to pull off this three-game series sweep. Will the Red Sox do just that, taking all three from New York tonight in Fenway?
I'll tell you what's interesting. You take a look at Tyler McGill's last 24 innings over the past month. He's got a high ERA, close to 6, but his xFIP number very manageable at 3.54. Garrett Crochet, on the other hand, 31 innings pitched over the past month, Ben, a 290 ERA and a 277 xFIP number. He's been great, and particularly great as a left-handed pitcher against right-handed batters, which is key because that's the majority of the lineup that you're going to get. Today, the left-handed batters in the lineup probably for the New York Mets, Juan Soto and Brandon Nimmo. Both of them do have high weighted on base percentage in ISOs against lefties, so we'll see that plays out. But as I said, on the season, Crochet's been phenomenal as well. The one thing that the Mets have done well, particularly over the past month, though, is as a team, hit left-handed pitching really well. Outside of Tyrone Taylor, everybody is really elevated, weighted on base percentages and low K rates. Here is the issue. You take a look at these two pitchers, they should be able to deal. It's a small ballpark. See the final score yesterday? Well, today again, 50-degree temperatures, which you never like, and a double-digit wind blowing in from right field. It's just not a great hitting environment. So for me, instead of take a look at both of these teams, which I do like at the plate, but it's just a severe downgrade with the pitchers on the mound and the ballpark with those weather conditions, probably going to stay under the total today for me.
Yeah, it's not great weather here along the East Coast. Really, the remainder of this week gets a little bit better during Memorial Day weekend and the holiday weekend upcoming. Just not exactly the most springtime vibes at this moment. The Mets now trail the Phillies by a game and a half in the National League East. The Phillies have won 5 straight. They swept the Pirates. And, of course, they have started off winning both of the 2 games so far this week at Coors Field. You got to beat the bad teams and take advantage. The Phillies have done that against the Buccos and the Colorado Rockies. The New York Yankees yesterday opening up their midweek set in the Bronx against the Texas Rangers. 5-2 win for the Pinstripes. My apologies, Will Warren. I kind of laughed at the idea the Yanks were nearly a $2 favorite with Warren on the bump. 5 innings of shutout work against Texas yesterday. Kane 10. Aaron Judge, his 16th home run this season. That's the most in the AL, but the shortest of his career. 326 feet, barely over the short porch in right.
Clown show.
Any comment, Donnie, right side?
Yep, absolute clown show ballpark up there. We could go out there today in the Bronx and knock stuff into the upper deck there in that short right field porch. Just the way it is. Shortness.
I'm not so sure I could. I don't have the greatest bat. I'm pretty good on the bump, though, as is Jacob DeGrom, who was sensational in his last start, makes his return to the Big Apple. Of course, not in Queens, but this time up in the Bronx. However, the Rangers, an ever so slight road underdog today inside Yankee Stadium. Total 7.5. What do you like in the Bronx battle?
Jacob DeGrom has been filthy over the past month. 29 and a third innings pitched here, 1.53 ERA and an xFIP of 2.43. Now, here's the interesting part that we're going to get into. Not the pitching of Jacob DeGrom, which I think will do a very good job against those Yankee bats. But once again, Northeast, 52-degree temperatures, double-digit wind blowing in from right field, rain in the forecast. It's just not great. But how about Yarbrough? This is the ultimate, right? Only 13 and two-thirds innings pitched over the past month, so not a huge, you know, game plan that we can sort of devise against him. His ERA, Ben, 1.98. Ooh, that's awesome. What if I told you his xFIP was 5.18, just looking to get beat up there out on the mound? But if we are looking at the lineup today, left-handed pitchers over the past month have really done well against the Texas Rangers. Langford and Jung have high numbers out there, ISO weighted on base percentage. Everybody else, absolutely horrendous. So I look at the 7.5 tonight with DeGrom on the mound. I think it's going to keep it down. Same thing here with Yarbrough and that bullpen for the Yankees. Under 7.5 in the Bronx. You never want to do that, but tonight, the weather conditions in the pitching matchup makes me do it.
Donnie, one of the issues for Texas this year, only 168 runs scored in total. That's the third fewest in the American League. The Rangers have 3 starters, Tyler Mahle, Nathan Eovaldi, and Jacob DeGrom, that have 3 of the 10 best ERAs in baseball in their 25 and 24 because of the poor offense this year in Arlington and even early this week in the Bronx. We'll go to New York City in Manhattan for game number 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
In today's world, planning ahead isn't always top of mind, but not having life insurance can leave families facing difficult financial uncertainty during already emotional times. In many cases, loved ones are left managing expenses, debts, or long-term obligations without a clear plan in place. Life insurance is one way to help provide financial security and support when it's needed most. That's where Ethos comes in. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy, and it's 100% online. You can get a quote with in seconds, apply in minutes, and even get same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions online, and coverage options are flexible with up to $3 million available and some policies starting at around $30 a month. Ethos has also earned strong customer feedback with a 4.9 out of 5-star rating on Trustpilot based on more than 5,500 reviews as of August 2026. Help protect your family with life insurance through Ethos. Get your instant quote today at ethos.com. That's ethos.com. Application times and rates may vary.
Live right here on the early line on Sports Grid. It is game number 1 tonight inside Madison Square Garden between the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. Of course, we have talked about the playoff rivalry between these two organizations and franchises. A lot in the late 90s, culminating in 2000, the last time the New York Knicks were in the Eastern Conference Finals. They played these Pacers. They lost in six games. But not just the 90s and 2000, but even a season ago, second round series between Indiana and New York, the Pacers winning in seven, even on the road in that seventh and final game inside Madison Square Garden. This is what we love about playoff basketball, a rivalry and so much at stake in the first time for the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2.5 decades. Game number one inside MSG, we have said it often, and it will continue. The biggest game, perhaps, for the New York Knicks inside Madison Square Garden in 25 years. And a 4.5-point spread in favor of New York with a total at 224. Donnie, what are the numbers telling you about the opening game of the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, bouncing around a little bit, right? You see the graphic there at minus 190. We were talking earlier in the show that price point was minus $2 plus here. And now we're back to minus 196 live. So you are getting some betting, you know, patterns that are coming in here. If I'm just going to take a look here at the front page on the FanDuel Sportsbook, the updated statistics here, still 60% of the tickets coming in on the Indiana Pacers, which I do think is appropriate for that. They're getting points. People like to take points. I understand it. If you think it's a true coin flip series, hey, I think they can win game number one. If they don't win it, at least they can keep it within a couple possessions. I understand that. But for me, it is still the New York Knicks at -4.5 that are getting my attention because of the bigness of this game. Not to say if they lose game number one, they can't win the series. And if the Pacers, game number one's not that big deal. We're focused more on game number two or game number three in our building. That's also not the case. I just think the Knicks need this. And also, from a series perspective, like around this minus a 140 price for the Knicks to win it, you better win game number one or this series could be slipping away right away even after game number one. The 223.5 does make some sense. Earlier in the series, as I always like to say, I like to go overs, even though last night that game didn't go over the total and the people were betting it up as if it was going to go over the total. But for me, I'll just stick with the side here at this point. The Knicks -4.5. They win this game. The energy in the Garden is going to be tremendous. The Knicks are completely healthy. All the starters can play 48 minutes if they want to tonight with no issues. I'm going to go Knicks winning by 5+ points tonight in Madison Square Garden.
60% of the bets on the spread backing New York as a home favorite, backing Indiana as a road underdog. 52% of the money on the spread backing the Pacers as a road underdog, getting 4.5 points. A total earlier today at 224 has worked its way down by a hook to 223.5. Donnie, the Indiana Pacers have been an incredible underdog both in the postseason and outright throughout the regular season. Indiana and OKC, the only two teams around the association that the entirety of this year have a winning record above 500 outright as an underdog. And the Pacers have done it in, I think, 36 or 37 games now. OKC has only been a dog three times. So the fact the Pacers are an underdog is not surprising and not a large issue for Indiana. As we look at the superstars in this matchup, Jalen Brunson for New York, Tyrese Halliburton for Indiana. Now, the Pacers star did score 31 in that Game 5 series clincher against Cleveland. He has had plenty of clutch moments already so far in this playoff run, of course, debunking the idiotic idea he was the most overrated player in the NBA. But he has not been exactly their highest scorer throughout every single playoff game. 31 points in that Game 5 victory, but not necessarily clearing consistently 18.5, his points prop tonight for Game 1. Jalen Brunson, a different story. Highest points prop in this game, 28.5. What will both stars show on the biggest stage in the sport?
Yes, and also understand this too. Like, we know the superstars with the high points props, right? You take a look. I'll get to Brunson in a second at his 28.5. But that's also like, yes, we have a closer and we have a guy that likes the basketball, but don't you love the feel for the Pacers right now? Halliburton, 18.5. Siakam, 18.5. Turner, 15.5. Nesmith, 12.5. Nembhard, 11.5. Like, that is balance here. And they got guys that can certainly put up some numbers off the bench as well. So if one guy isn't pointing up, we talked about it last night, right? You're saying, oh no, Anthony Edwards scores 18.5 points. They can't win. We have so many guys that can be that step-up guy, which is also a positive. But sometimes when you get later in series and, you know, the pressure starts to mount, you really do want that guy that's like, this is my basketball, it's under 2 minutes ago, watch me go to work. And usually it is Halliburton that you need to step up and has some big playoff moments so far just here in the playoffs. But for me, I do look at Halliburton as you accept that challenge of walking into Madison Square Garden. All eyes basically will be on him. I'm going to have the ball in my hand, pseudo point guard at this point. You know, I can make this big shot here. I wonder how he performs that. Do we go ahead and say, you know what, Halliburton's going to prove a point, 25 plus points, or was the Garden, was it too big of a moment? Was it too early in the series to try to handle? The one thing I know about Jalen Brunson, he's not shooting under 20 times tonight. I don't care how good the going game goes for OG Anunoby, for Karl Anthony Towns, the ball will be in Brunson's hands. I would be surprised if the Knicks win this game and Brunson does not cross over, Ben, his 28 and a half points.
Yeah, and it's a really good point, DRS. The volume should be there for Jalen Brunson. Not exactly the most prolific scorer in the final two games against the Celtics, but of course 39 in that monumental game four victory in the second round against the Seas. And I think what Donnie alluded to there in terms of the points prop tonight for Indiana just speaks to the strength of this Pacers side. Halliburton 18.5, Siakam 18.5, Turner 15.5, Nesmith 12.5, Andrew Nembhard 11.5. Again, in 7 of the 8 wins for Indiana in this playoff run, they have had 6 players at least in double figures. The Pacers an underdog in every single game against the Cavaliers. And all 5 games in that second round series, they won 4 outright. They were a dog twice against Milwaukee. They won one of those 2 games outright, 5-2 straight up as an underdog so far this postseason. DRS, right now the New York Knicks a minus 144 series outright favorite to win the East and advance to the NBA Finals for the first time since 1999. Oh yeah, the time the Knicks did that, by the way, who did they beat in the Eastern Conference Finals? The Indiana Pacers. A lot of rivalry at stake tonight in the Garden.
And by the way, will the chance be Knicks in 4 when it ends, or will the fans leave the building going like, eh, Knicks in 5, Knicks in 5? That's what we're going to figure out tonight, Ben. We will.
Probably both, DRS. Enjoy the money line. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rounding out this Wednesday live right here on the early line on Sports Grid, I am Ben Stevens. NBA playoff action tonight. Game number 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals inside Madison Square Garden between the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. A new season now underway in the WNBA. Opening weekend of the W just a few days ago. It should have been a crowning achievement for the league, and we'll talk about some of the numbers and the continued historic viewership that we have seen in the WNBA. It should have been a time to highlight the product being better perhaps than it ever has, and superstars excelling in these significant spotlights and moments. Instead, off-court drama continues to win the day in the W, unfortunately for the product. As we shared on Monday morning, following the season opener in Indianapolis between the Indiana Fever and the Chicago Sky, a hard foul by Caitlin Clark on Angel Reese late in the third quarter that led to many an online commentary. And then after the game and revealed on Sunday, the WNBA investigating hateful speech directed at Angel Reese and the Chicago Sky in the crowd in Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Not reported during the game, not spoken about in post-game press conferences by Chicago, its organization, its coach, or its players, but really the investigation based on social media comments following the game in Indy on Saturday afternoon. The WNBA is currently investigating. Both the Sky and the Fever have said there is no place for hate in this game. Goes without saying, but sadly must be reinforced in both organizations cooperating with the WNBA. We heard from the Chicago Sky yesterday at practice as they get ready for their second game of the year tomorrow night at home, their home debut in the Windy City against the reigning champs in the New York Liberty. Here's Chicago's head coach, Tyler Marsh, asked about that investigation from the W.
Yeah, I think we agree. I think we're in compliance with them, with the league, and obviously there's no room or space in our game for hate, and so we're complying with everything that's been going on.
Coach, when did you become aware of this hate speech?
I think when everyone else did. I think that it's it's something that, you know, we heard about. And so, you know, again, we're just forthcoming with anything that the league is able to do investigation-wise.
I'm not so sure in the quality of that audio. If you heard the reporter's question to Tyler Marsh, Chicago head guy there, when did you become aware of the hate speech directed at your team and your players? And Tyler Marsh says, we became aware when everybody else did, which would certainly allude to the idea they also saw it on social media. That's when they heard about it, not during the game or leaving the arena. The reason this is so hurtful to the league and the WNBA as a whole and its players is because it becomes almost like a boy who cried wolf or sheep or whatever that statement is. Because when you forego the idea of honesty and transparency, it actively hurts the investigation. It hurts the Chicago Sky. It hurts the Indiana Fever. It hurts the product for the WNBA, and it gives truth, even if there is a lack of evidence, to the idea of hateful speech being directed at Chicago. That is the issue. Angel Reese, by the way, at that practice media scrum yesterday, was asked specifically about what she heard, what she has told the WNBA in its investigation. She did not cite any specific examples. And Chicago Sky PR was quick to say, we're not talking about this. She has already been asked and answered this question. Again, it does not feel like there is a true transparent investigation playing out. And what really should be highlighted is the excellent WNBA product, the game of basketball itself. Sometimes, sadly, in the WNBA, it feels as though the commentary on the actual game of basketball is front and center, and not the competitive nature of the great games that we are seeing with the stars excelling in this moment, including last night in Indianapolis. What a great game between the Atlanta Dream and the Indiana Fever. The Fever down by double digits, rallying in the fourth quarter. Atlanta holding on at the end. Ryan Howard bearing a couple of clutch free throws. Keep an eye on this Dream team. Win number one of the season, but with the additions of Brittany Griner, Ryan Howard excelling, Breonna Jones with a big double-double last night, Atlanta is a really solid squad, handing Indiana its first loss of this season. The Aces get win number one of the year, winning by 25 on the road in Connecticut in a triple header of WNBA action tonight. The Minnesota Lynx off to a perfect 2-0 start. If you have not seen Nafisa Collier play, she's sensational. She'll go up against the Rookie of the Year frontrunner in Paige Beckers tonight at home in the Twin Cities. The early line returns tomorrow on a Thursday, 8 a.m. Eastern.